It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station from here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 56 degrees under fair skies. Out at the airport, they are registering 42% humidity, west winds to 12, gusting to 20, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the day, west winds to 15, gusting to 30. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak law enforcement has seized more than $500,000 worth of illegal drugs over the weekend. Kirsten Dobroth reports on that. The Alaska Marine Highway System has decided not to put the Ferry Columbia back in active service. That has downstream repercussions on the Kennecott. And volunteers and National Guard troops organize in Bethel as they prepare to fly out to hard-hit communities as a result of the recent storm.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden has more pointed words for Russian President Vladimir Putin and his war in Ukraine.
This war is about extinguishing Ukraine's right to exist as a state.
Biden speaking today at the United Nations hours after Putin's dramatic announcement to Russians. Putin is calling up 300,000 reservists to active duty in Ukraine, marking the largest mobilization since World War II. Putin is supporting a plan to annex more pro-Moscow areas of Ukraine, and on the heels of significant military losses in Ukraine, the Russian leader issued a thinly veiled nuclear threat as heard here through an interpreter.
We will certainly use all the means available to us, and I'm not bluffing.
Following Putin's speech, anti-government protests erupted. Hundreds of people reportedly were arrested. The New York Attorney General is suing former President Donald Trump. Several of his family members and associates also named in the civil suit, all accused of fraud. NPR's Laura Benshoff reports Trump is accused of manipulating the value of his properties to pay lower taxes and get better deals from banks.
New York's Democratic Attorney General Letitia James announced a civil lawsuit against Trump following a three-year investigation. The suit also names his eldest children, Ivanka, Eric, and Don Jr. James says Trump misrepresented the value of his assets more than 200 times over 10 years.
Donald Trump falsely inflated his net worth by billions of dollars to unjustly enrich himself and to cheat the system, thereby cheating all of us.
James is asking a judge to issue $250 million in civil penalties and has referred the case to federal prosecutors for possible criminal charges. Donald Trump Jr. tweeted a response saying, "This BS Dem witch hunt continues." Laura Benchoff, NPR News.
The Fed's ordering another jumbo increase in borrowing costs. NPR's Scott Horsley reporting the central bank raised interest rates by 0.75 percentage point today.
By making it more expensive to use a credit card, buy a car, even ultimately get a mortgage, the central bank hopes to tamp down demand, which has been outpacing supply and pushing prices higher. The Fed has now raised interest rates 5 times since March, and policymakers signaled that additional rate hikes are likely. The effects of the Fed's moves are already visible in the housing market, which is particularly sensitive to borrowing costs. The average rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage now tops 6%. Sales of existing homes have fallen in each of the last 7 months, which can also reduce demand for things like furniture and appliances. The average sales price of existing homes dropped in both July and August. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Dow's down more than 500 points. It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Law enforcement in Kodiak seized more than $650,000 worth of fentanyl, meth, and heroin this weekend. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports the bust was part of a major investigation into drug trafficking on the island.
Alaska State Troopers say more than 11,000 blue fentanyl pills were seized on Friday. That's nearly two pills for every person living within Kodiak city limits. Sergeant Garrett Frost supervises the troopers' statewide drug enforcement unit in Kodiak. He says Friday's bust was the largest seizure of fentanyl to date on the island.
There is a large consumer base in Kodiak, and there is a lot of money to be made by the sale of not only fentanyl, but meth, heroin, and other drugs.
Local law enforcement, including members of the Kodiak Police Department, Coast Guard Investigative Service, and troopers, also confiscated about 3 pounds of crystal meth, 89 grams of tar heroin, 5 handguns, and more than $58,000 in cash during Friday's seizure. The street value of the drugs is $656,000, according to the troopers. Police arrested 55-year-old Mark Nason and 42-year-old Adam Ross, both of Kodiak, and charged them with multiple counts of misconduct involving a controlled substance. Nason was also charged with misconduct involving weapons. Ross was released on $10,000 bail Monday. Nason is due in court for a preliminary hearing next week. Sergeant Frost says many of the drugs are linked to cartels in Mexico, and the seizure and arrests are just one part of a larger investigation into drug trafficking on the island.
There's a lot more going on in Kodiak than this specific investigation. I'm sure there's other individuals out there who are doing the same thing on the island, or these folks were working with other individuals.
The seizure and arrests come as local law enforcement and public health officials have been sounding the alarm over an increase of overdoses on the island, largely due to fentanyl. Alaska has been seeing a surge in fentanyl overdoses statewide, too. Kodiak residents can pick up the life-saving drug Narcan, which reverses the effects of an overdose, for free at the Kodiak Public Health Center. Meanwhile, Frost says anyone with information about drug activity can report it anonymously by calling the Alaska State Troopers Kodiak office and asking to speak with a drug investigator. Members of the public can also report tips anonymously via the Kodiak Crime Stoppers hotline and website. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
One of Alaska's main ferries won't be running this winter after all. The Columbia was going to be used on the mainline route running through the inner channels of Southeast from Bellingham, Washington and Prince Rupert, B.C. up to Yakutat. But the State Department of Transportation has decided to keep the 418-foot ferry sidelined. Sam Dapsovich is a DOT spokesman.
Columbia has been out of service for a few years, and we've got it just about ready to bring back into service, but we feel it would be a better backup ship than being the primary vessel out there at this time.
The nearly 50-year-old ferry has been tied up since 2019 to save money. Now the state plans to use the Kennecott and Matanuska through the winter and use the Columbia as a backup ship. The Kennecott will run through mid-January and the Matanuska from late January on. There will be a 2-week gap of no service in between. This also means the Kennecott won't run cross-Gulf service in the winter months, says Dapsovich, but it should return in May. Some other changes to the winter ferry schedule include adjusting the Tustamina dates out of Kodiak, filling the 2-month gap that was in the draft schedule. And it now provides trips to Prince William Sound between Cordova and Valdez, which connects Cordova to the road system during the 2-month stretch when the Aurora is in overhaul. But Dapsovich said it's not set in stone.
Those trips are dependent on weather because the Tustamina will have to cross the Gulf of Alaska between Homer and Prince William Sound to make those trips.
The state has also decided to go back to flat rates for now after 2 years of dynamic pricing. Dapsovich says customers didn't like the ferry prices changing, and dynamic pricing didn't work well with short staffing, which is an international problem.
Right now, with our crewing situation, we're not always able to live up to our schedule. And when that happens, we end up having to cancel people's plans. Potentially, they have to make last-minute changes, and because of dynamic pricing, they may end up paying more, and we don't feel that's right.
He says there is a recruitment program in place that should be filling vacant positions soon. After this weekend's storm, volunteer aid workers and National Guard troops are organizing in Bethel as they prepare to fly out to harder-hit communities. Their headquarters is the National Guard Armory in Bethel. KYUK's Nina Kraminsky went to the armory to take a look at preparations there.
A Black Hawk helicopter touched down outside the National Guard hangar in Bethel. Behind it, fluffy white clouds and a blue sky. It's clear out now, but just a few days ago, a strong storm ripped through, and it hit even harder along the coast, where some communities suffered significant damage. One of those communities will be the next stop for this helicopter. But as of yesterday afternoon, the Alaska National Guard hadn't pinpointed exactly which, according to spokesperson Dana Rosso.
We need to know from the communities who needs support, who has what going on, and that will really determine how we use this asset and where we move the guardsmen.
Additional National Guard troops are set to land in Bethel today. From here, they'll be flown out to assess damage and aid in recovery in harder-hit communities. Those incoming troops will line up cots in the armory's drill hall. In a classroom just beside it, the Red Cross already has a few cots set up. Like the Alaska National Guard troops, Red Cross volunteers are basing out of the armory while they wait to fly out to communities along the coast. Two Red Cross volunteers shuffle between the four Army green canvas cots on the classroom floor. Volunteer Suzanne Reebson is set to fly out to Chivac soon, maybe Hooper Bay after that. There, Reebson, who comes from Buffalo, will assess those communities' needs.
We're hoping to help them the way that they need help here in their communities, whatever that may be, to get them going forward again.
All the Red Cross volunteers coming in from the lower 48, like Reebson, attended a cultural education workshop at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage when they landed in the state. Richard Picard is the Red Cross site manager in Bethel. He anticipates the recovery process could take a while, especially if the storm destroyed people's food stores for the winter.
It takes a long commitment to providing people what they need, helping rebuild the community, and get the community back in a sense of normalcy.
He expects more Red Cross volunteers will arrive in Bethel in the coming days. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
Alaskans looking to support storm relief efforts should donate money to reputable organizations, officials say. Brian Fisher is the director of Alaska's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He says, at least for now, monetary donations are what's needed most.
At this time, we don't need stuff and things. We will work on that, and when we have specific requests, we will share that with the public to make sure we're all helping our neighbors. But at this point, the most important thing to do would be to support those organizations.
Those organizations include the Red Cross of Alaska, the Salvation Army's Alaska Division, and the Alaska Community Foundation. Alaskans can donate to the Red Cross online. Just select your local chapter to make sure the donation stays in the state. The Alaska Community Foundation has also set up a Western Alaska Disaster Recovery Fund, with 100% of donations going directly to rebuilding efforts. The World Central Kitchen is also accepting financial donations. They've already sent a plane load of supplies to the region. Ketchikan City Council pressed the head of an Alaska cruise industry group on Thursday about how cruise lines can help the city upgrade its port and pay for infrastructure to support the tourism economy. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, the president of Cruise Lines International Association Alaska said he was open to allowing Ketchikan to spend some of its port fees on city services, but he didn't make any firm commitments.
Ketchikan City Council members wanted to know if there was any room for leeway when it comes to how to spend passenger and cruise fees. Councilmember Mark Flora brought up the organization's existing agreement with Juneau, which allowed the community to use $10 million in passenger fees to expand their convention center.
You folks, as an industry, has there been any talk amongst yourselves about the opportunities for our community to have some latitude, some more autonomy with how we spend money off of our own public asset?
The discussion was the latest in a years-long back and forth about just how the per-passenger fees charged to cruise lines can be spent. In 2018, a federal judge in Juneau ruled that head tax revenue can only be spent on things that directly support the vessel. Flora also brought up an arrangement in the town of Bar Harbor, Maine, where some cruise ship passenger fees go toward the city's services. He wanted to know if that's a possibility for Ketchikan. CLIA Alaska President Charlie Ball didn't shoot down the concept.
The Juneau model does presuppose that a portion of the fees go to offsetting the cost of city government. And that there is a process by which that is reviewed so that, you know, there's a charge off for the various city departments that is embedded in the Juneau fees. So, yeah, absolutely.
He said there's room for negotiation, but said it was a discussion for another time.
It's not nearly as acrimonious as I think sometimes the media makes it out to be. We want to make sure, you know, that we're not subsidizing our businesses at the expense of communities. And we try and be as reasonable as we possibly can on a fee basis and how those work.
Ball said CLIA's top priority was upgrading the city's third cruise ship berth to handle larger ships. He said the city needs to expand the berth to stay competitive with a privately owned dock 7 miles north of town in Ward Cove. Councilmember Riley Gass also asked where the agency stood on raising passenger or cruise fees. He said raising the city's $9 per passenger head tax could make it easier for the city to afford upgrades to the berth and catch up on deferred maintenance.
Because I think we, from our side of this, are looking at probably wanting to see pretty significant increases.
Ball said higher head taxes were on the table.
It's likely, given the facts around all this, that the increase will be significant.
Ball said CLIA would be able to help with the cost of those improvements, but wouldn't give a firm dollar figure. Ball emphasized throughout the discussion how the agency wanted to keep a good working relationship with Ketchikan. The council didn't set a date for the next discussion with the agency. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The task force, charged with helping Anchorage come up with an emergency winter shelter plan, has issued its preliminary recommendations. Last month, the Anchorage Assembly set up the Emergency Winter Shelter Task Force due to frustration over the lack of a plan from Mayor Dave Bronson's administration. John Weddleton is a former Anchorage Assembly member and a member of the task force. He says the group looked at over 100 buildings for shelter options.
It ultimately got down where, okay, what are the Tier 1? What would be available and meet the minimum requirements quickly, because we have a requirement to house people when it starts getting cold out.
The timeline for the task force to identify possible city buildings to use this winter has been the end of September, when the makeshift homeless camp at the Centennial Park Campground will be closed. Weddleton says the former Golden Lion Hotel is one of the two shelter options the task force is strongly recommending.
Because it's ready now. You know, it's got beds, it's got sheets on the beds, it's ready.
Mayor Bronson has historically been reluctant to use the Golden Lion, having campaigned to sell the building when he ran for mayor. Recently, he said he expects the state to eventually take over the building because the intersection it sits on is also the site of a planned highway safety project. The other building the task force recommends is the Dempsey Ice Arena. The task force estimates being able to house between 85 to 170 people at the Golden Lion, with another 240 to 260 people at the Ice Arena. Both buildings are owned by the city. The recommendations from the Emergency Shelter Task Force differ from Bronson's plan, which was released shortly after the task force was created. The mayor's plan includes using 20 portable buildings from the Anchorage School District and building a new navigation center and shelter. Taria Ware works with the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness, which put the task force together. She says the task force considered the aspects of the mayor's plan, but didn't recommend them for several reasons. The portable buildings weren't deemed suitable due to concerns over restrooms and shower facilities. Additionally, a decision on funding for the navigation center has been pushed to late October, which Ware says just isn't soon enough.
We did not review the navigation center because we were really looking at what can happen in 2 weeks to 30 days. So that kind of got knocked off of Tier 1 and Tier 2.
The task force described Tier 2 options as examining other city buildings that could be available in 3 months after review from the task force. Since releasing their recommendations on Friday, task force members say they haven't heard any response from the mayor's office. In a statement, Bronson says he hopes to hold a meeting about the group's recommendations and listen to public comments before making a decision.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Read Diverse, Read Indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. The Makings of Me, My Journey to Seven Figures from My Living Room, is an inspirational and entrepreneurial new book from author Tiffany Harris that follows the emotional roller coaster of her life and self-made success with her thriving business, Custom Creations. Fresh and raw, yet honest and open, she lays bare what it has taken her to make it on her life's journey as she literally climbed to success from her living room. We spoke with her about this inspiring new book.
April of this year, I decided, okay, I want to go bigger. I need to get my products into stores because nowhere in the entire world can you walk into a retail chain store and purchase any items of sublimation. I partnered with Walmart and Amazon on their online sites, and I was selling my products on their online sites, but I had to do all the shipping, and that was putting too much pressure on me because I'm already doing direct to consumer and then the resellers and then the business, and now Walmart and Amazon orders too. So I was just like, okay, I can't do this. So then I hired a company to help me get into Walmart Fulfilled. So they'll fulfill the orders that come in through their websites and all that. So now I have that going. I'm hoping that through my sales from Walmart, they'll realize, oh, we might need to put this in our stores because this is some good stuff right here.
That's author Tiffany Harris on her fascinating new book, The Makings of Me, My Journey to Seven Figures from My Living Room, which is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Here is your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 21st day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:52. It will set again at 8:10. That will give us 12 hours and 18 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 30 degrees set in 1992, and a record high was 65 set in 1942. Currently, it's 56 degrees under fair skies, 42% humidity, west winds to 12, gusting to 20, and 10 miles of visibility, according to the sensor array at the airport. Sunny skies are predicted for the rest of the afternoon with a high near 53, west winds to 15, gusting to 30. For tonight, a 40% chance of rain after 2 a.m., increasing clouds overnight with a low around 45, west winds to 15, gusting to 30. And for tomorrow, a 40% chance of rain. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 55 and south winds to 10, becoming light and variable later in the day. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 1:01 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 6.4-foot tide is all. Followed by a low tide at 6:10 p.m. of 3.6 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 1:21 p.m. and be 10.6 feet, followed by a low tide at 7 p.m. exactly of 4.9 feet in Larson Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory through Thursday. West wind to 30 knots today, seas to 9 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 30, seas to 10 feet. And for Thursday, over tonight, southwest 30, seas to 10 feet, And for tomorrow, southwest 30, becoming west 20 in the afternoon, seas to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. West wind 30 knots today, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, southwest 30, diminishing to 20 knots after midnight, seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow, on our west side, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. Thursday night, west 25, seas coming up to 5 feet. The Kodiak City Council will have a regular council meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. The meeting's open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to tune in right here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and that link, as well as meeting packets, are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Fairwinds Players needs actors for a Halloween-themed show they'll be putting on in early November. It's called Boo. Open auditions will be held this Saturday and Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. in the Drama Pod at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. All ages, all levels of experience are welcome. The show is mostly a series of 12 short skits that are funny, fun, and won't require a lot of rehearsal or memorization. A great way to dip your toes into acting if you've ever had that desire. Contact Mike at 907-654-4171 or email gm@kmxt.org for questions, a script, or to arrange a separate audition if you have a conflict. But again, that's between noon and 2 p.m. at the Drama Pod, Saturday and Sunday. There will be a celebration of life for Bill Harrington on Saturday, October 1st. That's a week from this next Saturday. That will be from 4 to 7 p.m. at Tony's. Everyone in the community is welcome to come. Please bring a potluck dish to share, an instrument to play if you feel like jamming, and your memories and good cheer. And they're looking forward to seeing you there. That's Saturday, October 1st, 4 to 7 p.m. at Tony's. Join us for a community run, jog, walk hosted by Kodiak High School Cross Country and Island Trails Network. That's this Saturday, September 24th, along the Near Island Perimeter Loop. This is a 4.5-mile event starting at the North End Trailhead parking lot. Sign-up starts at 9:30 a.m., and the run, jog, walk starts at 10 a.m. No fee, but donations are welcome. All participants will receive a map showing all the Near Island trails. And again, that's this next Saturday. Sign-up starts at 9:30 a.m., at the North End Trailhead parking lot. There will be a Board of Education retreat on Saturday, September 24th, beginning at 9 a.m. That's happening in room 106 in the Benny Benson Building in Kodiak College. The meeting agenda for the can be viewed at Board Docs at the Kodiak Island School District website. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. Early voting is going on right now. The Assembly Chambers, located at 710 Mill Bay Road, are hosting early voting from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on weekdays all the way through October 3rd. Early voting is similar to when you go to vote at your polling precinct on Election Day. At the time you vote, your eligibility is verified, and you're given a ballot to feed into the voting machine. Early voting ballots are counted and included in the unofficial tally on election night. Therefore, you're encouraged to take advantage of the option to vote early if you happen to be driving by the high school. If you have any questions, please call the city clerk's office at 907-486-8636. And the Humane Society of Kodiak is having a Walk Your Dog event. That's happening 10 a.m. Saturday, October 1st at the Kodiak College. Join in the fun for dogs and their humans. Pre-register online or the day of the walk. The deadline is September 28th to pre-register. Registration is just $15 and t-shirt and registration, $30. Registration on the day of the walk is $15. T-shirt pickup and the day of registration begins at 9:30 a.m. That's at Kodiak College, October 1st. Full details can be found at www.kodiakanimalshelter.org or call up Linda at 907-654-5717. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting a Remembrance Altar Workshop. That's happening Saturday and Sunday, October 15th and 16th at Rooted Kodiak, which is at 1817 Mill Bay Road. Sometimes the best way to move through your grief journey is through making something meaningful with your hands. Bring mementos, photos, small treasures, etc. from a past loved one, and with the guidance of artist Bonnie Dillard, create a beautiful tribute piece to hang on your wall. You'll be provided space and materials for people to create a meaningful piece of art that holds memories of a lost loved one. For more information, register at hpck.org or give them a call at 907-512-0600. Don't miss out as the Kodiak Arts Council kicks off their performing arts concert series with live music from contemporary Scottish band Scarivore, Wednesday, September 21st at 7 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Hailing from the island of Tyree, Scarivore formed in 2005. Their music is an eclectic fusion of rock, pop, and traditional music with an emphatic thundering of drums and bagpipes and is as rich as single malt scotch. With their outstanding musicianship and mesmerizing vocals, Scarivore has become an international sensation. Reviewers at the Falkirk Herald in Scotland say, "See them now before they rocket up into the same musical orbit as the mighty Mumford & Sons." More information and tickets are available at www.kodiakarts.org.